Hi, I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
And I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. This week, we're talking about Irish vegetable soup and our favorite frosty coffee. We've also got an interview with Sonia Overheiser about her new book, Pretty Simple Cooking. But first, let's compare notes on something we read this week. So
you found this one on BBC.com. Not a place I often visit, but I really love the article.
Yeah, I don't really even know how I found it. It was one of those things that kind of just drifted my way. But it was an article all about how food becomes an element in diplomacy and the different, sort of hang-ups and ways it's helped and ways it's hindered. And I just thought it was an interesting thing to talk about.
It was pegged to recent events. Apparently, the leaders of North and South Korea got together for the first time in many years. And then, of course, there was a state dinner here where we hosted the president of France and his wife. So kind of like in the news.
Yeah. And the ways in which, you know, they went back through history or sort of recent history to talk about some of the ways that world leaders haven't liked things that they've been served or they've felt uncomfortable. Hillary Clinton, she calls food the oldest diplomatic tool. And, but then, you know, people say things don't always go to plan.
Of course not. They did recount the famous incident of George Bush.
Yes.
Puking, for lack of an elegant word, at a dinner in Japan.
On the prime minister.
Which the Japanese are still making fun of us for.
It happens. You get sick sometimes. They also...
He had the flu, apparently, but I'm like, why didn't he just reschedule? Or I know that it must be hard to reschedule a state dinner, but like, yeesh.
Well, as someone who has gotten food poisoning or the flu, who knows what it was, at times where I thought... Force of will. I can just control this by force of will. I can talk myself out of it. A couple of years ago, I was supposed to do an event, a book event, and I think it was food poisoning. And I went to the event and I was like, I can do it. I can get this happen.
Oh, no.
And then I threw up in the bathroom just before the event started, and they found a couch for me to sleep, and I slept through the whole event. I missed the whole thing. And my friend Lynn just carried on for me, which was amazing. But, you know, sometimes you think you can overcome that sort of things and you can't.
I love the idea, though, as food is the oldest diplomatic tool and how it can bring people together and break down barriers and remind us of our shared humanity and what we have in common. I was there for all of that.
Yeah, it was a fun little read. So if you're looking for something that'll kind of connect you to your fellow person, fellow man, human, it's a nice article to read.
And of course, as always, we will have it in the show notes. Yeah.
All right.
On to what's for dinner.
So, as we mentioned in our last episode, I went to Ireland. And one of the things that I found myself really being attracted to on this trip was all of the vegetable soup. And I think we mentioned this, that vegetable soup in Ireland isn't necessarily what you would think of when you think vegetable soup in the U.S.
It sounded a good deal heartier, the way you described
it. It's heartier. It's a in all cases that I encountered it, it was a pureed or blended soup. Whereas, you know, here a vegetable soup is often like, you know, chunky, brothy. This was a hearty pureed vegetable soup. And it was different from pureed soups that you find here. And so I was kind of intrigued by it. Every version I had was different, but they all sort of had a similar heartiness and consistency and pleasure to them. And so when I got home, I went looking to see, was there something different about Irish soups than, you know, other soups? And what I found, I consulted Dorina Allen's book, The Forgotten Skills of Cooking, which is a really...
Is she Irish?
She is one of the... she's the founder of the Ballymaloe Cooking School. Mm-hmm. And so she...
Is that in Ireland?
Yes.
I'm not familiar with it.
We stayed on the grounds of
the
Ballymaloe house. And she is one of Ireland's sort of preeminent food writers. She's trained generations of cooks in Ireland. And so I consulted her book. It has like 700 recipes. It's a really useful sort of all-purpose resource. And she had a ratio. And I thought, I love a ratio. Let me see how this works. And the ratio is one part onion, one part potato, three parts any other vegetable, mm-hmm. and five parts liquid. Hmm. And part of what I think is useful about the ratio is, first, potato is an essential. What it does is it gives sort of a grounding, a base note and thickening. It really lends itself to the texture more than anything else.
And it makes your soup more filling.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. So, and she uses more butter or oil than I ever used in my soups.
Oh yeah. Why? That's not in the ratio.
It's not in the ratio. But so I made a batch where it was about, and I was using, ended up using like 400 grams as my one part because that was how much potato I had. Mm-hmm. And so I just made a batch using, so it was 400 grams of onions and leeks, 400 grams of potato. I used 4 tablespoons of butter, but it made a lot. It was 8 servings. So that's not that much.
It's not excessive. Mm-mm.
And then I used parsnips, carrots, and celery as my other
quote unquote, three other parts, vegetables.
And then 5 parts water. And it was, and then a lot of salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
especially if you're using water instead of stock.
Yeah. I did use some vegetable better than bouillon as well, but it was so good. And the ratio, I think it's the ratio. The ratio is magic. And so this is I am going to adopt this ratio for all vegetable soups that I make, whether it's carrot. And she also says in the essay that goes along with this ratio that you can use greens, like that it's really adaptable.
I was going to say, when we say any other vegetables, is because when you talked about the soup that you had, I noticed a conspicuous absence of like green vegetables.
Well, some of the soups were greener than others. So I think that some had like spinach thrown in at the last minute and then pureed in. I mean, the only thing she says is if you want to use greens or you want to use tomato, that they should go, they don't need as much cooking as some of the other vegetables. And you want to make sure that your potato and your onion are really well cooked. Mm-hmm. So then you add some of those sort of lighter, more delicate vegetables later. But yeah, I want to make another batch this weekend. I have some spinach in the fridge and some broccoli.
What about asparagus?
That would be so good.
Like this is the time. Mm-hmm. We finally have it.
So really, I love the ratio and I love the kind of hearty, you know, make it anything you want it to be, but dig into a really filling, hearty bowl of soup.
In Ireland, were they serving it with bread?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you would recommend?
They were serving it with that classic, really hearty whole wheat Irish soda bread. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, if you want to go that far, definitely go for it. But even just a piece of like whole wheat toast, you want something a little nutty.
Sure.
Would be fine.
It sounds great.
It's so good. I really recommend it highly. And I think you guys should explore the 1-1-3-5 ratio because it's, you know, the nice thing about a ratio for cooking is that you don't have to have a specific recipe and you can adapt it to what you have. And I love that.
Sonia Overheiser is a writer and recipe developer focused on healthy home cooking. Together with her husband, Alex, she wrote the new cookbook, Pretty Simple Cooking. You may also know them from their hugely popular food blog, A Couple Cooks. Sonia is also a cancer survivor and a new mom. Welcome, Sonia. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Pretty Simple Cooking is a vegetarian book. All the recipes are vegetarian friendly. Are you a vegetarian? Are you an Alex vegetarian?
We're not. And that always kind of blows people's minds, right? we actually are about 90% vegetarian. I might be closer to 95%. Mm-hmm. I love eating vegetables, and that's mostly what we eat at home and what we cook for ourselves. But when we go out or if we're on vacation or if we have a special guest, we will flex and eat meat or seafood.
Right. I mean, it doesn't blow my mind because that's pretty much my approach as well. At home, I do keep it very plant-based, but I definitely will splurge once in a great while. I don't know why it's hard for people to wrap their minds around that. Have you found when you talk to people about your book that they find it freeing or they just don't understand it?
Yeah, I think when they start to kind of open their mind to the concept, they definitely find it freeing. And I think maybe in past decades, saying the word vegetarian or vegan was very strict. It talked about an entire lifestyle oriented around these very strict guidelines. But I think these days, the term flexitarian has kind of started to take off of being, right, you know, mostly plant-based. And I think a lot of people are enjoying the idea of thinking, not having to be strict about the way they eat, but trying to do as much as possible of eating vegetables. And that's why we wrote this book. We wanted to help people understand how delicious it could be to eat vegetables no matter how often they wanted to eat them. So whether it's just one meatless meal a week or five or seven, we wanted to provide a resource for people to be able to eat not only delicious recipes, but approachable and accessible recipes.
Pretty Simple Cooking definitely struck me that way as being sort of non-intimidating for someone who wasn't, you know, ready to commit to a vegetarian diet. It's just like a buffet of healthy vegetarian options. And I think that we actually need more books like that, because whether you eat meat or you don't eat meat, everyone needs to eat their vegetables.
Right. And we wanted to also have a delicious and beautiful take to it as well, you know, not go so easy and oversimplified that it was dumbed down. We wanted to have that beauty and the artistry combined with the accessibility. So that's why we have the pretty and the simple.
Yes, it is both pretty and simple. To shift gears a little bit, you are a cancer survivor. Can you just tell us briefly about your cancer diagnosis and treatment?
Sure. So I was diagnosed when I was 27 with a very rare form of leukemia. It's called CML. And when I was diagnosed, my doctor said, well, we think you have leukemia, but we think you have the good kind of leukemia. And I said, what does that mean? And they said that there is a miracle drug for the type of leukemia that I ended up having. And I didn't have to do any chemo or radiation. I just had to take a pill. And so I started taking this pill and my white blood cell counts went back to normal. And so I lead a pretty normal everyday life. I don't have to think about the fact that I am living with leukemia. Now, I do have to be on this pill for the rest of my life. So it's not a full cure, but it definitely has transformed my life so that I don't have to think about cancer on a daily basis.
I'm curious, what happened first, your interest in healthy cooking or this cancer diagnosis?
Yeah, actually, my interest in healthy cooking started first. And it was only a few years before that. But Alex and I, my husband Alex and I got married and we bought a house and we said, okay, let's cook for people. But we didn't know anything about cooking. And I literally had no interest. I couldn't even make spaghetti. I was completely just over my head in terms of wanting to learn this new skill. But we just picked up a cookbook. And one of the first books we looked at was the Julia Child cookbook. And I just found her personality so inviting and warm and accessible. And she said, you can learn to cook. You don't have to have a background in it. You can be any person and learn to make an omelet. Here, let me show you how. And we really gravitated towards her approach of just relating to people and helping them just feel like the kitchen was a place that where they could have joy and where they could make mistakes and just try again tomorrow. And so her approach is really what has shaped and guided our interest in the kitchen. And then...
She's certainly not a vegetarian-friendly cookbook author. You first were getting into home cooking. Were you thinking about health and having a plant-forward diet, or did that come later?
Not at first. So that came a little bit later. So after we had started cooking a little bit, we read another book by Mark Bittman. It's called Food Matters. And this was back in the 2010-ish or 2009 to 2010. And the book just talked about the benefits of eating more vegetables and cooking from scratch, throwing out some of the, some of the processed options, just trying to make those at home and just the benefits that that has on your health and on the health of the planet. And for us, we loved his approach of just, okay, try eating one meatless meal a week. And we said, okay, I think we can do that. So we started with that and we found that we really loved it. And then we did find that we felt like we had more energy. We could sleep better. I used to get a lot of stomach aches and I didn't have those anymore. And so we really found that that combination of both cooking at home and then being very centered on eating as many vegetables as we could just transformed our lifestyles.
Now, you and Alex are both from the Midwest, right?
Yes, I'm from Minnesota originally, and Alex is from Indiana, and right now we reside in Indianapolis.
I think of that region of the country as not being particularly vegetable or vegetarian focused, and then this could just be my preconceived ideas about it, that there tends to be more like heavier casseroles or processed ingredients. Is that accurate to your experience growing
yes.
up?
Yes, that is it. That is very much accurate. And I think that's one of the reasons that we were inspired to start our food blog, A Couple Cooks, was that here we are in the middle of the Midwest. We're excited about vegetables, and there's not a lot of people who also are excited about vegetarian, plant-forward eating. So at the time, it was very much of we were the only people we really knew doing this. And over the years, it has definitely grown. There are so many more people that are interested in plant-forward eating. There are tons of farmers markets here in Indianapolis now. I would say the restaurants are still a little behind. There aren't quite as many plant-based options as you would see on the coast, but there's definitely an interest in it.
That's cool. Now, so you were already eating pretty healthy when you were diagnosed with leukemia and got on your treatment program. Did you think to yourself, now it's doubly important that I have a healthy diet and lifestyle?
Yeah, I think that being diagnosed with a life-threatening disease in your 20s makes you stop and say, okay, like, I'm not going to live forever. Or, you know, like, it helps you kind of grapple with your own mortality. And you say, okay, like, what are some ways that I can make sure that I have the best chance for living a long, healthy, sustainable life? And so I think at that point, it made me look at a lot of different things in my life and say, okay, like, I need to be making healthy choices in all arenas of my life to ensure the quality of life that I want for the remaining years that I have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Now, in terms of collaborating with your husband in work and in the kitchen, on Local Mouthful, Maurice and I are both married, and we talk a lot about like how we divide kitchen duties and sort of go about our home cooking lives. And it seems like you guys have a really great working relationship in the kitchen.
Yes.
Now, I'm wondering, when it came to the book, did you guys sort of divide tasks? Like, is one of you more into writing the recipes? Is the other one more into doing the photo shoots? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, the fun thing about being a couple cooks is that we're both very interested in the recipe development. So that is a joint effort. We're always working on those together. One person will generally take the lead on a recipe and say, I have this great idea for XYZ. And draft it, and the other person will kind of give critical feedback, and then we'll make it and see how it went, and then continue tweaking from there, kind of collaborating in that way. So usually at least the one person who's just kind of leading the idea will be the originator, but we're very hands-on. And then once the recipe...
So, like, what if...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, we definitely do. So Alex will sometimes pitch me and say, here's a really crazy idea that I had. And I'll say, I don't think that's going to work.
That's funny.
And he'll say, no, it really is going to. And so sometimes I'll have to say, okay, like, prove me wrong. Show me that it's a good idea.
And
or vice versa.
Have you been proven wrong?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's wrong a lot. I'm wrong a lot. Or we say, I told you so a lot, but it's all part of the process. I mean, sometimes there's been recipes I've doubted him on, and he'll make it for me and I'll say, oh my gosh, I had no idea that could be so delicious.
Is there any recipe like that in the book that you can think of?
Oh gosh, let me see. I think there's a recipe in the book the one that I'm thinking of recently is on the blog, actually.
What is it?
Is that okay to talk about?
Let's talk about the blog.
So there's a recipe on the blog. I went to New York recently and had some vegan meatballs. Mm-hmm. That might sound a little odd to some people, but they were really good. And it was with spaghetti and some vegan Parmesan. I was like, this is so good. And I told Alex about it. And he was like, okay, I'm going to make some. and the main ingredient is going to be potatoes. And I was like, I'm not sure about that. I don't know if that will really be good. And he said, no, just trust me. I'm like, okay. So he whips them up and they were amazing. I loved them. And we just published them on our blog. So
they look delicious. I was looking at that recipe this morning and I pinned it. I love a vegetarian.
Oh, fun. Yeah. They're so fun. They're really great. Just plant-based option for when you're craving that comforting feeling of spaghetti and meatballs, but you want to still eat vegetarian.
Right. Right. Now, I do know a lot about navigating kitchen life with a spouse. I don't have a kid, but I can only imagine that being a new mom to a 14-month-old baby boy has changed your home cooking life a lot. Is that true? And if so, how is it different now?
Yeah, I think the funny thing is that Alex and I love cooking so much, and we've made it so much a part of our lives that when our son Larson came along, we just kind of fit him into what are already established eating patterns. And so we actually cook just as much as we did before. And we really believe in exposing him to the kitchen at an early age. So he is always around us when we're cooking. He's always eating what we're eating. You know, sometimes he might not like what we're eating and we'll have to prepare something separate, but we just really kind of were like, okay, you know, we love cooking and we want to continue cooking this much. And so we've just kind of fit him into our rhythm that revolves around the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Maybe soon you'll be a family cooks.
Yeah, there we go. A couple cooks plus a baby.
Now, I think your book is especially good for people who might be just getting into home cooking. And I'm wondering if you had any little bits of advice to share with someone like that, and specifically what recipes in the book you think would be great to start with if you don't have a lot of kitchen experience and you want to get started learning and practicing.
Yeah, we have a lot of recipes that are good for beginners. We have arranged the main course chapters in terms of simplest, kind of middle of the road, and then special occasion. So if you're new to the kitchen and you want something quick and easy, you can go to our simplest dinners chapter. And in there are some very, very simple but delicious concepts. We have some quick fix pinto bean tacos. So the filling is scrambled eggs with some really great taco seasoning like cumin and chili powder and pinto beans. And it makes a really fast, great taco. You don't really need to know anything about the kitchen to make it. There are a couple soups in that chapter that are really stunning as well. There's a smoky lentil stew that is very delicious. And
that one caught my eye for sure.
Yeah, there is some chopping involved. So you've got to dice an onion and mince a little garlic, but it cooks very quickly. It only cooks for about 7 to 10 minutes. So when you put the lentils in. So overall, about 15 minutes of cook time, which is very short for a stew. And there's a couple other soups in that chapter that are really good. And then another one I like to mention is our red lentil coconut curry with cilantro chutney.
Yeah.
That one seems to be a fan favorite so far. The lentils are very flavorful. They have a bit of red curry paste in there. So a lot of flavor and some coconut milk. And then the cilantro chutney is so good. It's like a tangy, sweet, tart condiment that goes with it. And the two of them together are just delicious.
They are definitely the kind of recipes that keep me cooking. Well, I think that they would provide great inspiration for someone newer to the kitchen.
We want the book to work for cooks of any age or experience level. So there's definitely things that are more complex in our special occasions chapter. There are all sorts of ideas that are still fairly simple, but have more complex flavors and take a little bit longer too. So we tried to have something for everyone with a focus on just keeping things beautiful, approachable, and delicious.
And before we go, can you tell our listeners where they can find you on social media, the internet? Do you have a newsletter?
Yeah, we are at acouplecooks.com. So no of, just a couple cooks. And then Instagram is our social media of choice. You can find us at at A Couple Cooks. And then our book is available anywhere books are sold, on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and your local bookstore.
So look for it. Pretty Simple Cooking. Thank you so much for joining us, Sonia. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Joy.
So it's getting to be warm.
Thank goodness.
I have mixed feelings about that.
I know you do.
I'll tell you something that I do not have mixed feelings about. And it is my favorite cold coffee beverage.
Gotta have ways to get through it all.
It is Fonte's, which is a fabulous kitchenware store here in Philadelphia on the Italian Market, frozen granita.
You know, I've never had it.
That blows my mind.
Really?
Yes. Well, I'm surely you've had a Starbucks frappuccino.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, but imagine that, only actually delicious. Made without artificial ingredients or corn syrup, just like really good coffee, actual cream. Actual sugar.
Okay, it sounds really good.
And they give it to you in serving appropriate sizes. If you want to get a big cup of it, you can. But the small is like actually small. It feels like just the right size. And it is such a high point of the warm weather season for me. I could get it all the time, but I try to limit myself to three times.
Summer?
Yeah.
Okay.
I get it the first time I see it.
Uh-huh.
Then sometime in July when I just really need to pick me up, I go get it. And then I have a get it before it's gone time. Because it is sweet and creamy and wonderful.
Definitely a treat.
But on a broader level, I just love everything about Fonte's.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell people that maybe are not familiar or don't live in the area more about it?
Sure. So, Fonte's is our family-owned, locally-owned kitchenware store here in Philadelphia. And they sell all manner of cookware, utensils, cutting boards, gadgets. They have a whole room dedicated to tea and coffee, which makes me really happy. Then if you head upstairs to the back, they've got all sorts of baking stuff. It's, you know, whether you're a first-time baker or sort of an amateur, or, you know, an amateur who aspires to greatness, or a professional baker, you're going to find things there that you need and want. All sorts of extracts and flavors. They've always got canning jars and canning equipment. Whenever I need jars for a class, I know I can go there and they'll have everything I need. They are just the one-stop shop in Philadelphia for kitchen gear. And what's great too is that if you need something special that they don't have, that's hard to get, they'll order it for you. And they're friendly and lovely and kind and excited to help you to success in the kitchen.
They also have a very, highly curated and reliable selection of books and that's magazines.
True. Yeah.
You can find Edible Philly there. You can find Food in Jars there.
All true. You can find Stuff Cooks Should Know there.
Oh, yeah. That's true as well. Yeah. My little book, Stuff Every Cook Should Know. Are we just saying that because we wrote those things? Maybe just a little. I've definitely bought other publications there and books there.
Yeah. Well, what they do really nicely is they curate a lot of Philly authors. So if you're looking for a cookbook written by someone locally, you'll find it there. As well as they sort of do lean Italian. So you'll find like Marianne Esposito's books are often there. I think that they had a stop recently from, Lydia Bastianich. So you can find a variety of really sort of interesting things. They make good gifts. There's just a lot to love about Fonte's.
The only thing I don't love so much about it is that I always, always buy more things than I plan to buy.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for me to get in and get out. Like, I get lost looking at all the stuff, particularly the gadgets. You said gadgets. I don't even know what the right word is. Like, kitchen doohickeys.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many things that you never knew that you would want or need.
Yeah, a peeler or a corn zipper or, you know, all sorts of things that you think, oh, I didn't know that even existed, but now I must have it.
Yes, yes.
So I feel really lucky that we still have that in Philadelphia, because a lot of places don't have their own local kitchenware stores anymore.
It does have a lot of local personality. So while the weather is, and the granita, it's only available in the summer. So if you're in Philly or you're visiting Philly, it's totally worth the stop. It's such a treat.
Yeah.
And that's it for this episode of Local Mouthful. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.